James from Temples.
I'm Sam from Temples.
I'm Adam from Temples.
And I am Tom from Temples.
Tom from Temples is now screen, he's the opposite, he's screen right. So I'll fill in some blanks. Let's see. We know that Kettering is a small town. We know that you were in other bands back in 2006. We know that you uploaded Shelter Song and were magically discovered by the label, which we're not, we know that's not exactly how it happened by any stretch of the imagination. You were formerly, what were the Moons? You recorded in your home studio, blah, blah, blah. We've just killed the whole interview. But what's more fun is, in any good narrative, between the lines is the more interesting thing. And there's got to be some things about this band. We're going to go through lots of fun things. There's a full sheet here that you actually want somebody to know. And by the way, you can lie.
Okay, we all play in the five-a-side football team. And Henry, who helps us out, he's a goalkeeper. But we all play out on the pitch.
So you play footy?
Yeah, yeah, every Sunday.
So are you as good as Manchester United?
We've not played them yet.
Are you going to play them?
No.
I guess the story of all four of us being from the same town is kind of a cliche. It's actually true though. We are all from Kettering, and we, for the majority, we all still live there. So
you still live there?
Yeah.
Wow, you haven't moved to Brooklyn yet.
No, not yet.
You have to move to Williamsburg. Not hip enough. Well, oh, look at that, hip enough. And what are the next words on my sheet? I'm going to cover this one early because yesterday I just ran an interview that I only did a few weeks ago with my other friend, colleagues, the Stripes. And one of the things I love talking about with bands at this exact moment in time is the hype. And very much like the Stripes, let's see, you've got one of the Gallaghers. The Maniac Gallagher really likes you. I've had him on the show. Oh, right, they're both Maniac Gallaghers. I forget. They're both crazy Gallaghers. But you've got a Gallagher. You've got a Marr. And everything that gets written up from moment one about a band at this moment in time these days tends to be the hype. But having famous people who like you doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be the next Smiths or the next Oasis. So my question is, do you care?
No.
Right. So let's go. Thank you. So that was a leading question. But let's go a little further on that, because article after article, and people like me coming at you, and the first thing that they say is, so how does it feel to have all of these famous rock stars that you admire you?
These famous people who said stuff about us was so early on. It doesn't really mean, you know, while it's great they have such a reach of people who might listen to what they say, it doesn't really matter because, you know, I'm sure they didn't know much about us at all then. And, you know, as much as anyone else did, so.
I don't think people come up to you at shows and go, you know, I came to see you because I read that Noel Gallagher, they come because of the music, right? Because they've heard from friends or because they like the songs.
Yeah, that piece of dialogue you said there is what happens in people's heads when they read it, and then they instantaneously do that online and make up their own mind. That's what's happened. So, yeah, people don't come and see us based on the recommendation. They search YouTube or for our website on the recommendation and then come to the show if they like the music. So I don't see it as ever being a negative thing.
It wasn't like Chuck Berry said, I love the Beatles.
Yeah. Well, we played it really cleverly. Like, we gave Noel Gallagher a tenner and just to do it. So we thought...
Did you get a tenner? I gave him a lot more than that. And I didn't get anywhere. But I was trying something else.
Yeah, well...
That'll cost you a bit more.
So let's get the story about Heavenly right. Did somebody come to a gig? Did somebody really find it when you uploaded it on YouTube? Tell me, let's make sure that story is correct. They picked up the phone.
Yeah, we got a phone call from Jeff Barrett, and he really liked, then they came to gigs. We didn't, you know, sign a deal over the phone. They came to gigs to see whether we were good live. At this point, you know, not even a real fully gigging band at all.
I was going to say, in playing live, you had just done some music, you weren't even ready to play live yet.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's kind of fun. So they got to see you really raw, so to speak.
Really, really bad, yeah.
Really? See, that was nice. Yeah. I don't know if you were bad. I just know that you probably were working
it out. The songs were still there, so it weren't that bad.
Well, but aren't the song? Yeah, there you go. But aren't the songs the point though?
Exactly. So even if you did it pretty badly, the song is still in there in the sentiment that it's truly trying to kind of portray. I think even if it's a bit out of tune, the song's still there. The lyrics are there.
So the they heard you, and they said, "We want you," and you didn't. You just said, "Good label, we'll do this."
Kind of. Yeah. It was over a period of a few. Well, yeah, we did the single exactly on a handshake in a pub, and we did the single, and then from then on, they wanted to do the record, and we spoke to a few labels because we didn't want to just kind of. We had no idea, it was all new to us, so we didn't want to just jump at the first thing, you know. That's one thing that we always got told by, you know, peers in bands and friends that are in bands, that you shouldn't just jump into things. But at the end of it, after, you know, a few weeks of talking to different people that loved the music we were making, we went with Heavenly just because they really understood artistically what we were trying to do, and they felt like they could handle it in a way with as much respect to the music as possible.
And you get the power of a big label and big distribution and big PR and all the toys, but you also get a label that's kind of got a little bit of a gestalt to it, because if you look at who's on Heavenly, you can't just say it's all this kind of band, right?
I mean, the roster they had before we joined was something that really, you know, we're big fans of a lot of the groups that they have on their label, and there's just, yeah, something about the way they kind of operated that really matched up with how we wanted to do things. And I think that, you know, it's, you know, there's nothing more important than, for us at the time, it was an album, and we always spoke very early on about putting together an album, and a couple of the other labels we spoke to weren't possibly, you know, interested in looking at an album, but with Heavenly they were keen on focusing on that and getting it out as soon as possible, which was important.
Where did management come into play? Was that afterwards?
Yeah, it was afterwards.
We operated for quite a while without, you know, sort of a lot of other people's help, and a good friend of ours, Lois Wilson, used to manage us. I think it got to a point where I had to sell a car for us to do a tour, that we kind of thought maybe we should look at this differently.
Yeah. So where is that point? Where was that exact moment? Because we're not talking a lot of time here, where day jobs went away and music became the day job.
Yeah, the day jobs went away quite a while ago, I think, just so we could focus on the music.
Yeah, but that's a very kind of liberating and interesting moment when you say, okay, we're actually doing this, right? But it's also a little scary, is it not?
Yeah, but I think, I don't know, you always feel like you're doing it, whether you've got a day job or not. You still know what your thing is, and the more you don't have to do any kind of menial jobs, then I guess the better.
You've said this is pop music. The psychedelic thing. I mean, every one of these songs opens with a killer hook. No question about it, right? And you know this, and you've obviously studied this, and we're not going to talk about how you studied this. But how do we early on, and do we care about getting rid of the whole, this is a psychedelic record?
It's just an annoying question, isn't it?
Right.
It's essentially what constitutes psychedelic, and it's such a broad term for many genres.
Well,
and
you know it, we just set out to write pop songs. Is Time of the Season a pop song, or is it a psychedelic song?
It's a great song. That's it.
So
right?
Maybe it's just songs.
But it's got great keyboard. Why is it a great song? Because it's got great keyboards, and because the reverb's
melody,
just perfect,
yeah.
And stuff stops at exactly a moment where you've got silence there, but the reverb hangs over. I mean, that's what it is, right?
A lot of the time, people, when they talk about songs like this being psychedelic, it's probably songs that they like to take drugs to and listen to when they were high or something, you know.
But it's about the hooks, isn't it? Hooks are not evil, are they?
Yeah, but that's
pop
music. Doesn't mean
hooks. Yeah. I guess like anything that evokes a feeling or an atmosphere, people could loosely tell.
If I'm humming Keep in the Dark in the shower, as I find myself doing all the time, then that's a hook, right? And that's not bad because it's
hooks
sticking with me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got nothing against hooks at all. You know, we're fond lovers of melody and melodies that aren't the same old shit that everyone's been doing for the last 20 years.
It's always, for us, I think it's a perception thing. You know, you can perceive something as psychedelic, but as soon as it becomes like a style or something like that, then it kind of loses its point, I think.
Okay, but what does become a Temple song.
We had a mixer do 10 of the tracks, yeah. Mm-hmm. Claudius Mittendorfer. He wanted to, I think, he mixed Colours to Life, and we were kind of against the idea, and then when we heard it back, we really saw that he could really get the headroom that we couldn't at home in the studio, because the nature of what desk we were using, and we didn't have the headroom to really bring out the parts we'd produced to their fullest kind of, potential.
But he didn't take it, and he didn't up. I was listening to it on a really good sound system in my car. He didn't take it, and he didn't up it. He didn't take it and make it booming. He didn't make the bass rattle my entire cage.
No, he did it with complete respect of what we'd already created. What he did, he just almost made the room for the parts to speak, so you could hear them all without it being cluttered. And the only songs that we, Shelter Song was just left, and it was just left as it was because we felt like we owed a lot to that song. It didn't need fun with.
But everything else fits with it. And I guess that's the key, isn't it, right? Like, if I listen to Shelter Song and then I listen to three others and I said, wait a minute, this is not the same, the same stuff, then there would have been an issue there. So you obviously, young or not, you've done your studying and you're aware of all this stuff. So when you're making this, you're paying attention. Harmonies. Should we talk birds? Who should we talk? In between, as you're writing these songs and as you're putting together a record and you're doing it off tour, you had to have some things that you said to each other that really made it what it was. And I imagine harmonies and the need for making sure that they were pristine was part of it.
Didn't really talk about it at all. Like, it just happened, yeah. I think you know whether a harmony works, you know whether it's in tune or whether you should layer it three times or whether you should layer it once.
Do you, though?
Yeah.
Okay, but the guitar riff on 8 Miles, we can duplicate that with the exact amount of distortion if we go into the blah, 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 Kelvinator and blah, blah. You didn't do that.
There's none of that at all.
Yeah, you could do it exactly the same as they did and it just wouldn't sound the same because there's obviously an atmosphere caught there. And I think it's the same with vocals and harmonies. It's all kind of impulsive, really. And you keep working on it until it sounds right. And you just know, I guess, between us.
And you kind of look and you're on stage and you're playing a big festival like a Coachella or some of the festivals you'll play this summer. And you kind of say, wait a minute, it's only been a couple of years. Do you look and go, whoa, wait a minute, what's going on here? Or do you say, nah, you know what? Heck, we got our record deal and we didn't even have our live thing down yet. So you know what? We're just going to keep going because this is working.
Yeah, you just have to keep going, I think. It is really fast. Everything's like happened really fast, but that's not to say that you can't, accelerate in front of that, artistically. And there's a live group, and I think we're very much looking forward to making music again, recording, because we haven't been in a studio for 6 months.
The other thing that is kind of neat, though, is some of the bands you're going to be opening for. Now, for example, I know you're doing the Enemy thing. You're doing Interpol.
We've done that.
Just done.
You did that already. So what's that? So an audience that comes for Interpol. How did it fit?
It didn't.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, it didn't.
It didn't. So experiment gone bad, learning from that, or okay, both worthy bands.
So all four of the bands weren't, the bill wasn't very good at all, I don't think, for the Enemy tour.
Enemy gone bad,
yeah. It didn't work.
What's the learning from an Enemy tour, from a South by Southwest, as you're moving forward in terms of, because playing live is so important.
There's, I guess it presents a challenge when you're put in, a place in front of people who perhaps don't know who you are or who are there for someone else. And, I think that makes it, twice as exciting, I think, to show these people what you're about, who have no preconception of, perhaps what you're like live. So yeah, it's usually quite fun.
Makes you appreciate these tours more.
You've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs on the outside, and then, unheard of, I play 40 minutes of solid music with no jingles. So what I want is two Temple songs, and then you each to name three or four songs each by anybody.